One of the big stories over the past decade, at least, is the opioid crisis here in the United States. This addiction by many to prescription painkillers. It's been a fascinating story as it unwinds, as we see lives destroyed, addictions. But what's come up in the past few years is the role played by the pharmaceutical companies in this epidemic. I've been listening and reading several of these stories, and it's amazing to listen to what the efforts these drug companies went to market these opioids. The pressure they put on salespeople. I saw one where they produced a music video, and in this music video, there was this person dressed up as a giant bottle of fentanyl. And there was this rap song, and they were going around, and this was used to kind of encourage these salespeople to sell more and more. They were offered massive incentives. Oftentimes, the sales reps, there was one company that hired sales reps. They hired almost exclusively female sales reps, and they hired them based a lot on what they looked like, because they knew a more attractive salesperson could sell more opioids, because the opioids come through the doctors. And if you can get the doctors selling it, there were other things that were beyond what we would describe in church here, these drug companies went to the efforts in order to sell these things. And he listened to it, and one of them was recently convicted and fined with a massive charge. But at the root of all that was what? The idea was, if we sell more drugs, we make more money. And so as we read these scriptures, we think, oh yeah, that's what this is all about. That's what Paul was talking about when he wrote to Timothy. It said the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, because we can clearly see that in this big drug company, that the evil they went to in order to sell these things and all the lives that were destroyed, the people who were addicted, the people who died of opioid overdoses because of these big drug companies. Or we can think back to 2008, if you can remember, when the housing market collapsed and where the fingers got pointed. Where? At the big bankers, right? Because the big bankers were full of greed, and they handed out these subprime loans, and they bundled them together, and people lost their retirements, and people lost their homes, all because of the greed of those people up there. And when we think about greed, that's how we often think about it. We often think about greed as something that the rich people are guilty of. It's usually the people who are way up there. It's the bankers, it's the CEOs, it's the big insurance companies, it's the pharmaceutical companies. Those are the people guilty of greed. We seldom think about ourselves. We seldom think about those who are maybe down at the lower end of the economic scale. And so we're going to look at this topic of greed today and see what greed is really about, why Jesus talked about it so much. Why did Jesus talk so much about money? In fact, most scholars recognize that Jesus talked about money and possessions more than just about anything else. That he had these constant, and you think, why did he talk about this so much? Because he recognized the grip that it has and how easy it is. In fact, there's one interesting story we didn't read today that Luke tells, where Jesus says, watch out for all kinds of greed, which is kind of a funny thing. It's almost as if greed can catch us by surprise. I mean, it's almost like you say, watch out for being a thief. Well, nobody has to watch out for being a thief. It's just something that happens, and you know that it's happening. But greed is kind of a secret thing. It's kind of an insidious thing that sneaks. Is that me that's crackling here? That sneaks in and gets us and grips us and takes charge of us. So we're going to look at this, and falls in the context of this series we've been doing on the seven deadly sins, or the seven capital vices. And so we've looked at some of those. We started off by looking at envy, which is a bitterness over others' good. When we see somebody else who's got something good, and it's not that we just want what they have, but them having the good bothers us so much, we'd rather it be destroyed, rather than see them destroyed than them possess it. We talked about vainglory, which is this quest for image, this desire to look good, that we always want to look good in front of other people, and all the efforts we'll go to in order to get the applause. And last week we talked about sloth. And for those of you who weren't here, or those of you who have forgotten, sloth was not simply the idea of sitting around eating a bag of Doritos and binge-watching Netflix. That sloth is something more than that. Sloth is really a spiritual condition where we're really not willing to do the work of looking deep inside of ourselves and letting God work with us to be changed and to be transformed and to become more like Jesus. And that, in fact, sloth can look like laziness of just sitting there, but sloth can also be manifested in this busyness where we're always busy doing things, especially church things, And we do those things in order to avoid having to do the deep work of working deep inside of us. And so that's sloth. And so today we're talking about greed. And I started off by saying that oftentimes we think of greed as the people up there, the people who make all the money. They're obviously the greedy ones. But I want us to consider the words of Jesus here that Matthew relates in chapter 6. And so this is a setting of what's often known as the Sermon on the Mount. And so Jesus has gathered his disciples on a hillside, and he's talking to them, and he's talking to them about this good and beautiful life, what it looks like to live in the kingdom of God. Now, what I want you to consider is, who are the people that are gathered around on this hillside? Who are these followers of Jesus that he's talking to? Is it Herod? Is it the rich people from Jerusalem? Is it the wealthy and the elders that are gathered on this hillside? Probably not. Probably the people who are gathered are the poor. They're the people who are working day to day. The people who are hoping that there's some fish today so that they can feed their family. It's the farmers who struggle day in, day out, wondering if they're going to have enough crops. And so these people gather around and are listening to Jesus as he paints this wonderful picture of what it's like to live life with God. And then he says to these poor people, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So he looks at these people who don't have a whole lot and says, be careful. He says, do not store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. So we think of treasures sometimes as what? Something valuable, right? But what makes something valuable? What makes something valuable is the person who has it. And so there were stories during World War II of concentration camp victims who had a tiny little, maybe a spool, something in their pocket that reminded them of their family. And that little thing in their pocket was worth more than anything else in all the world. Have you ever encountered a child who has that little rag doll, that little thing that's the eye is coming off and the stuffing's leaking out and you keep having to poke it back in? You say, well, let's just, why don't we get you a new one? And what does the child? The child clings desperately to that. And anyone who looks at that little rag doll would say, this isn't worth anything, is it? But it is. What's the value? The value that child to that child, it's a treasure. And so we see that treasures take all kinds of forms, and that a treasure is just something we long, and we long to keep safe, and we want to protect it. And what Jesus says is, do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth where moth and vermin destroy. And he recognizes that all these things that we treasure ultimately fade away. All these things that we have, we long and we cling to them, but they ultimately fade away. But he says, instead, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. What in the world is he talking about, treasures in heaven? He never defines it. Sometimes you wish Jesus would go and say, okay, he'd like stop for a moment and say, okay, explanatory comma. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, and here's what I mean by that. But if we read the rest of the Gospel of Luke and Matthew and Mark, and we can see some of these things, and one of the things that talks about treasure is the things of the kingdom of God, the way we care for people. And so treasures in heaven oftentimes are people. It's how we care for the poor. It's how we look to those around us. We store up treasures in heaven by participating in the goodness of the kingdom of God. And so treasures in heaven are those kinds of things. It's caring for the poor. It's looking the outlook. It's smiling at someone. It's how we love God and how we love our neighbors. Those are the treasures in heaven. Those are the things that we store up, because those will not be destroyed. Those will not fade away. And so he talks about two treasures, one on earth and one in heaven. And so he's starting to help us get a picture of money and what it looks like, and of greed. And what do we mean by greed? I mean, we all kind of understand. I never defined greed, but it's an obsessive, it's a disordered love for possessions or for money and accumulating those things. And when we say greed, it doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong with having those things. And as you read through the Bible, you see there are people who are wealthy. There are people who have great riches, and they use those riches for things. In fact, there's a story in the Old Testament of God who gives to one man this wealth and riches, a man named Solomon who asked for wisdom. And God says, okay, you're going to have riches. So It can't be that possessions themselves are bad, but it's how we use them and how they affect us. And so greed is a kind of a disordered love and desire for those. And then Jesus goes on, he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. And here's a confusion. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So we all know, understand what that means, right? Good, because if you do, there aren't any other scholars that do. Because all the commentaries I read through said that we don't really know what that means. It just kind of pops out of nowhere. But essentially, it's, I think in some ways what it is, it's talking about how we see things. If you think about it, the way we look at things. So when we see a possession, when we see something, when we see that thing of value, and all of us have those things of value, don't we? Those things that we value. And sometimes it's described as, what's that thing you would grab if your house were on fire? Other than your spouse, right? What's that thing you would want to make sure, I want to get that out? And I think of these forest fires that have devastated California, or floods, and you imagine people who've lost everything. And what's it like to lose all our earthly possessions? Especially we in America here, who have no shortage of earthly possessions. And we were driving down the street the other day, and we drove past a house that was building a barn, a pole barn behind their house. And I think the pole barn was about three times as big as the house. And so I see some of you looking at your spot. So they're saying, what is it with the barns? And why do we keep having to have more and more space to fill things? Why do we have storage lots everywhere? Why do we... Look at my own, and I'm some of you who helped me move are wondering the same thing. Where these boxes it was like a clown car. The boxes just kept coming out. I think somebody was running around back and putting boxes back inside the truck, and stuff just kept pouring out. And so we think of all these possessions, all these things that we have, that our closets are overflowing. And we build bigger closets, and the bigger closets just get full. And so these possessions, and so, but it's how we look at those things. So our eyes are about the way we look at those possessions. How do we view these treasures? And then Jesus talks about two other things. So he's talking about two treasures, two kinds of eyes. And then he says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Or in some of the older translations, mammon, which is... So what Jesus does here is he says possessions or money are literally a god. And what does he mean by that? I mean, what do gods do? Gods provide security, they provide meaning, they provide hope, and he's saying you can't serve both of those. And so I think of two stories, and these are personal stories about myself, and about the way possessions can affect us and the desire to possess. And one goes way back to when I was little. And when I was little, I wasn't the fastest kid on anything, but I wanted to be fast. And so I remember my mom taking me shopping for shoes. It was time to buy a new pair of tennis shoes, and I was looking. And as a little boy, I had become convinced, I think by marketing agencies and ad agencies, that different shoes could make me faster. I mean, that if I had the right shoes, I'd be a little bit faster. And so I somehow got in my mind the idea that if I looked at the bottom of the shoes and looked at the different tread patterns, that some tread patterns were faster than others. And so I'm looking through the shoes, and I thought, oh, this pair of shoes, look at these will make me fast. Now I finally beat Ty in that race. And so I'm looking at these shoes, and I bought the shoes, and you know what happened? I still lost. But I had placed my hope. I thought having this thing, having this possession would somehow change who I was, that this possession would somehow make me better. So I wasn't just buying a tennis shoe. I wasn't just buying a pair of sneakers. I wasn't just buying a running shoe. What was I buying? I was buying a hope. I was buying a dream. I was buying an identity, a purpose. And that happens often, isn't it? If we think if we have this thing that somehow it will mark us, somehow it will make us better, that if we have this item, that if we have that new dress, if we have that new house, if we have that lawn that looks a certain way, if we have that new car, and we'll tell a story about a car here in a minute, that somehow we will have something and this will become our identity. And so what's happened is the possession has become our God. Because now we're finding our hope, our security, that somehow all these things will be content, that I'll be content if I have this. And so now a car story. This is a few years later. 1993, I'm coming back. I served in the Army after college and did ROTC in college and went in the Army. My first duty station was in South Korea, and I didn't have a vehicle there. And so I had one car before I left, and my first car that I had before I left for Korea was a 1971 AMC Matador. And so if you're not familiar with the AMC Matador was a station wagon, right? Big brown station wagon with an AM radio. This was a nice car. I mean, it was in great shape, but that was my first car as a 20-something-year-old, and I was pretty excited about it. I had that car. But when I got back from Korea, I'd given my AMC Matador to my brother who needed a car, and so I thought, wow, I really want to get another station wagon. No, I didn't want another station wagon. I came back, and I wanted a new car, and so I looked and looked and bought 1992 XLT Ford Explorer. They were brand new at this point, this Cabernet Red, and I loved this car. I mean, I don't use that term. I mean, this car, I'd sit out there, and I remember buying that car, my first new car, my only new car ever. And I remember driving, and I was staying with my parents for a few weeks until I went to my next duty station at Fort Benning. And so I had this new car, and I was sitting out there, and I remember sometimes wake up in the middle of the night, walk out to the window. Yeah, that's my car. Look at that car out there. And this car, I babied this car. It got washed every single week, probably waxed once a month, detailed inside and out, and I watched, and I made sure it was. And then there was the day it got its first scratch on it. I know, it was hard. And then over time, another scratch. And then when I moved back to the northern states, like Minnesota, this other thing started happening to the car called rust. And then things started breaking down on it. And it wasn't working so well. And finally, it got parked out in front of my house and sold for a couple $100s because there wasn't much left of it. But for a long time, this car meant so much to me. And it was this possession that I had. But then I think of these words of Jesus. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where vermin and moth and rust will destroy. Right? But I also thought about all those hours that I spent. All those Saturdays where I was washing my car. All those Saturdays I was out making sure it was waxed. And then I had detailed the inside and gotten everything just right. I thought, what if I had used those hours for something else? What if I had spent some more time with some of my friends? What if I had volunteered somewhere else? What if instead I had chosen to store up for myself not treasures on earth, but treasures on heaven? Because the reality was, no matter how much I washed and waxed that car, it was still going to fade away. No matter how carefully I kept it, no matter how many times I changed the oil and did those things, it was going to break down. Well, sometimes we have that car that lasts 200, 300,000 miles. But in the end, every single car eventually breaks down, doesn't it? Every pair of clothes eventually stops fitting us. Every pair of clothes eventually wears out. Every house that we have, eventually things start to fall apart. Every possession that we have begins to fade away. Nothing lasts forever. And the hopes and the dreams that they offer never come true. Or they fade away. That thing that we have, no matter what it is, we cling to it, we buy it, we think, if I just have this, then I'll have security. If I just have that, it will give me purpose. If I just have that, it will give me anything. And Jesus says, no, it won't. No, it won't. It will eventually go away. And he's saying, our heart cannot be divided. In this line here where he talks about, you will hate the one and love the other. You will be devoted to the one and despise the other. He says you can't serve both. If we go after treasures of this earth, if we're clinging to those things, if we're letting our heart be consumed by the things of this world, we won't be able to serve God. Why? Because we'll be looking for our security. We'll be looking for our identity. We'll be looking for our hope in those things. We'll be looking for happiness in those things. And he says, that will not happen. And if you look for happiness there, you're not going to be looking for it in Jesus, which is the only place we can find it. If we look for our security in our things, if we look for security in our possessions, if we look for hope and joy and peace in our possessions, then we won't be looking for it in Jesus. And when we look for it in our possessions, eventually they will let us down. And Jesus says instead, look for it in Jesus, who will never let us down. Look for our hope, look for our security, look for our possessions. He says, you cannot serve both God and money. You cannot cling to both. You can't hold those. And so, earlier in it, he's got this line. He says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And notice the way, the flow, the direction of that sentence. It starts with, where is your treasure, there your heart will be. It doesn't say, well, if your heart is in Jesus, then your treasure is going to follow. He says, no. Where you put your treasure, where you put your possessions, that's where your heart will be. And so Jesus warns, he says, this will happen, that if you pursue goods and possessions, they will let you down. And if you pursue goods and possessions, at one point they will become like a god to you. You will look for your hope, you will look for your security, you will look for all those things in those possessions. And if you're doing that, you will not be serving God, which is why Paul, in another letter, said, greed, which is idolatry. Because this desire, this quest for possessions, can become godlike. And so Jesus invites us to break that cycle. He says, I want you to put your hope, your trust in me. Now that first song we sang today, my wealth is in the cross. In other words, that our hope, our ultimate hope is, as Bonnie pointed out, you know, there ain't no hearse with a trailer hitch. That we can't take any of those things with us, but instead we're storing up our treasures in heaven. And our wealth, our hope, everything that we have is called being Jesus, and so our possessions. So what do we do with our possessions? And if we read the stories of Jesus, we realize that Jesus gave different advice to different people. That sometimes in following Jesus, we want the formula. We want somebody to just tell us, well, what do I need to do? How much stuff should I have, Pastor? I don't know. For each one of us, it's going to be different. But some of it's recognizing and maybe doing that inventory and saying, which is the stuff that I'm clinging to desperately? Which is the stuff that is my treasure? Which is the stuff that I obsess over? Which is the stuff, and maybe that's the stuff that has the grip on your heart. Because over my years of ministry, I've met people who had lots of wealth, and it was not a problem. I mean, they weren't attached to it. And I've met people who didn't have a whole lot, but they were attached to what they had. And so it's a question of being able to look inside your heart with God's help and say, what am I attached to? What do I need to do? Some of us, we need to give more stuff away. And that's the way we break this cycle of greed, is giving things away. Richard Foster tells a story of when he was young and his family, and he had a swing set, and his kids had outgrown the swing set, and they didn't have a lot of money at the time. And he was thinking, well, we can sell this swing set now that the kids are done with it. And as he started thinking through it, he began to think, well, he thought of, well, if I sold the swing set, I could get this much money and I could do this with it. And he began to realize the hold, the attachment he had to this swing set. And finally, he decided, I'll just give it away. Because he realized, recognized what the attachment was. And so for each one of us, that's what we have to do. We have to look and say, how do my possessions have a hold on me? How are they dictating the way I live my life? Are my possessions, are my things, are my quest for getting more possessions, do they have a grip on my life? And are they preventing me from fully loving God and fully loving my neighbor? I can't tell you what it looks like for each one of us. But I can tell you the way to break it when you recognize it is to begin to give more away. To be able to recognize, say, or to simply not get more stuff. I mean, we do. I know my email inbox is flooded daily with ads for this thing's on sale and that thing's on sale and you need more of this. And that's the trick of advertisers. No offense to advertisers, but an advertiser's job is what? To convince you need something you didn't know you needed. I mean, that's what an advertiser does, right? Is convince you. Sometimes, have you ever done that? You're looking through something like, wow, I didn't know that existed. I need that. I mean, how could you need it if you didn't even know it existed before? But that's the way it works. That's the nature of accumulation. That's the nature of goods, is this desire for things. And so we need to break that cycle. So maybe the way we break that cycle of greed is to simply say, I'm going to cut myself off from these advertising. I'm going to
avoid commercials. I'm going to avoid going shopping. And I know that's not so much a thing anymore, but sometimes people go and they're like, oh, I'm just going to go window shopping and start looking. And then we end up not with just window shopping, but with bag shopping because we walk home with a bunch of bags. And this desire and saying, oh, well, maybe that thing, I need, maybe we just need to stop accumulating less. It's not simply giving it away, but just recognizing, do I really need more things? And maybe taking that pause, that reset, when we think, oh, well, hey, I really like it. Maybe I should get one of those and say, well, do I really need that? Or why am I wanting that? Am I looking to buy that new shirt? Am I looking to trade in my old car? Am I looking to upgrade my computer? Am I looking to get this new phone? Why do I want that thing? Am I looking, is it somehow functioning as a God for me? Is it somehow boosting my status? Do I see it as providing security for me? Do I see it as providing something that's missing in my life that really should be found in Jesus and in Jesus alone? So Jesus invites us and says, we need to break free of this, because when we get gripped by possessions, it's not simply a thing like, oh, that's too bad. It's a matter of when we get gripped by possessions, we begin to serve those possessions instead of serving God. What Jesus is saying is those possessions can take us away from the most precious treasure there is. And that most precious treasure is Jesus. And so let God help you figure out where possessions have a grip on you, where greed has a grip on your life, and let him help you break free of it. Because our greatest possession, our greatest treasure, the greatest thing there is a life with Jesus. We can't allow possessions and things of this world to get in the way. So find your life, find your wealth in the cross of Jesus. Find your possession, find your meaning, find your hope, find your security, find those things in Jesus, who alone is the one who can fulfill, who will never fade, who will never rust, who will never let you down. Put your trust in him and in him alone. Amen.